Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 22nd of October. Time is flying.
Flying. Although my installation of Mavericks is not.
I don't know what that means.
Well, the new OS X, no longer.
It's called Mavericks?
Yeah, there's a new
you
whole
mean
naming.
Like the surfer thing?
It's a whole new naming sequence.
What happened to the lot? What the cat, the feline stuff?
There was a speech by, what was it about?
How did I miss this? I never heard of them naming it after surfers.
Oh, they took the, or maybe football teams.
Or but maybe like, animals, horses.
It is, that is. It's going to another naming convention, and they can use Mavericks. They were using cats for a very long time. What did they use before that? Use something before that?
Just numbers, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So now it's called Mavericks. OSX, let's see, it's called OSX Mavericks. And it's installing, and it's doing whatever it does. It's a free, you know what's interesting? It's a free download.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft doesn't do these kind of things.
I don't understand it.
How do they, is it because it's their equipment?
Well, you know, they want every – Apple has this thing, unlike Microsoft. Microsoft wants to make money on everything. Apple wants – they do charge once in a while. But it seems to me that Apple wants to get everybody on the same page because it makes it easier to do a lot of other things.
It's quasi-cloud.
Oh, that's not good.
Right? No, you know what I'm saying? In other words,
that's it's not good.
Why?
Why is it good? The cloud goes down and now you're quasi.
No, well, right, Quasimodo. No, what I mean by that is that the by putting everybody on the same platform and keeping everything synchronized, it's not the cloud where they can change things on the main system and everybody changes across the board, but at least there's a lot more people on the same system so that they can manage it a lot easier. What do you think?
I guess. I don't know.
Let's go on to
another
subject.
I think he has sold a bill of goods.
Let's go on to another. Well, it's free. So I downloaded it. I always on this particular machine, so it's going to sit there and do its thing for a while. Anyway, we got some numbers today that came out.
Oh, wait a minute. Before you go on to that,
what?
Let's go on with the thing that about the winner of the Navstar.
Oh, yeah.
You forgot all about that.
I did. I messed up last week a little bit.
Yeah, you messed up.
But we do have a winner for Navistar. Navistar is Gary N. He won. Let me tell you real quickly that the winning price at the end of the period was $37.43, and Gary N. came in within 26 cents. Number two. You know who number two was?
I can only imagine.
John C. Dvorak.
How about that?
Yep.
Well, you know, I've been playing the Navistar thing on our fake game, so I'm pretty familiar with the activity of that company.
Let me think how everybody
You know, I used to work for them.
Did you really? What did you do?
I used to work at the San Leandro International Harvester truck manufacturing plant as a sub-assembly technician for two summers, actually. They rehired me the second summer. It's one of those summer jobs.
What? That is some title. I mean, that's not the kind of thing you could put on a card. You have to really put a banner out. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, speaking about harvesters real quick, there is a series of videos on YouTube called the Red Bull Winch series, the winch something or other.
Yeah.
And what it is they use a winch, you know, that turns and it pulls up rope. And it's they have a very, very long rope. And this winch is super powered, so it goes very fast. And they wakeboard in all sorts of places using this winch. And a fascinating video, if you look this up, it's the Red Bull winch, but cranberries. They're in a cranberry bog. Now, do you know anything about cranberries?
Yeah, they grow. There's this like growing rice, I guess.
They wet, but they do not grow in the water. They die, as a matter of fact. But what happens is that when they harvest them, they take the combine and they in this marshy area, and it whacks from the roots and it shakes all the cranberries out of the vine, and the cranberries have like an area in the center that allows it to float to the top.
Oh, right. Right. Yes, guys. So when you make cranberry sauce, they're all floating at the top.
And what's fascinating is
then they pop like a popcorn.
You get this incredible area of red, And then they bring it in with nets. Anyway, these guys wakeboarded in this cranberry bog, and it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I guess. Kind of disgusting since people eat those cranberries, but okay.
Yeah, it's probably in our cranberries right now. But it was the cinematography and the high-speed camera work they did is fascinating. So I would look it up and check it out. Beautiful colors. Anyway, so the winner was Gary, and I came in about a halfway down, a little bit lower than the halfway. The high entry was 39.39, low entry 32. Average entry was 35.80, way off.
Huh.
Way, way, way off. So we're not going to give any credence to our intelligence of our
crowdsourcing. Yeah, the mob, the wisdom of the mob didn't pay off.
Right. We have a lot of stupidity of the mob this time. Next week is coming up. We'll talk a little bit about SodaStream. This is the big one. Now, by the way, Gary, you won a copy of John C. Dvorak's book, and he will get those out to you soon. Next week, SodaStream, and that's where we're giving a $50 Amex gift certificate. I believe that
Gary N's going to feel gypped.
Well, he could win again.
Yeah, he could.
I think that
you can win as many times as you want. If they're that good, you shouldn't worry about it.
And I think the nice thing about the timing on SodaStream is their earnings are coming up right after. So there could be an interesting run going on for SodaStream before that. So it's SODA is the symbol. And starting when you hear this, you'll be able to put in your entries over at DH Unplugged in the closest to the pin contest. Get them in, get them in, get them in. All right, let's talk about some things that are going on. Okay. All-time high for the S&P. All-time high for the small caps. NASDAQ is hitting, 13-year high. Why is this? Markets are overjoyed. Because we have the BS deal with Congress, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That crapola that went on there that didn't do anything.
It was the absolute definition of kicking the can down the road, and nobody mentions that anymore. They used to always complain about kicking the can down the road. So they do it, and they don't complain. I thought that was quite amusing.
This is more like tapping the can 3 inches.
Well.
Because they're only going to come back to this in January.
Yeah, I know. It's ludicrous.
We have earnings. Very mixed bag on earnings, although we saw I'll get into that in a second. We have the economic numbers, which we didn't see for a while, although we did see today the unemployment rate that was due last week.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that. What happened?
Of course, it'll
be adjusted next month, but that's beside the point.
The estimate was somewhere in the 150 to 170 range. We came in, and I think at 122, very low, but miracle of miracles – the unemployment rate went down again to 7.2%.
Yeah.
So I did put some charts on.
122 is not good.
No, not at all. I did put some charts here, and I showed you where the recent unemployment rate is. But more importantly, I showed you where the labor participation rate is. And we are the lowest – labor participation rate right now, dating back to 1970s.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I'm looking at the shadow stats unemployment rate.
Yep.
Alternative. We still have the one going up. That's the shadow stats, and the other two going down. And
what is shadow stats? What are they saying the rate is?
Yeah, it's about 24% at this point.
No, that's for the U6. That's the.
No. No, that's
really
what I'm telling you, 24%. The U6, which is on here too, is about 14.
That doesn't make any sense.
You have to look at this chart. You can see what happened. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, but 24% looks a little bit here. Oh, here you go. What's the shadow stats? Oh, I see. The U6 and U3 are the officials. I see what you mean. Yeah, I'm looking at that. So the U6 and the U3 are the unemployment rates that the government puts out. The U6 is all of the unemployed. The U3 is the one that adjusts it for
for further bull crap.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The shadow stat is the same one they used during the Depression.
Wow, that's pretty scary.
Which is approaching the Depression numbers, which I believe was 33 at some point. It was about a third of the people that could work.
Wow.
This is up there, and it's been going up steadily since 2009. It's been going down everywhere else, but it's been going up with this calculation. And I believe it. I mean, so, I think a lot of people are doing fine and are doing better than they were, and the housing thing is coming back a little bit. But there's a lot of people that just are either not working or they're working so part-time that they barely eke out a living. I mean, really, I'm in an area where there's a lot of activity, but most places don't have as much as the San Francisco Bay Area.
I'm looking at the inflation rates now, and I'm looking at the official numbers on CPI and the alternative, which is based on 1990. We're talking about 5% inflation rate, where everybody else is saying 2%. But the consumer inflation is really interesting. We're seeing about 1.5%, but when we're looking at the shadow stats, it's more like 10%.
Yeah, 9%.
Reminds me of that movie, I think it was Jerry Lewis, Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the Water. You know, if you don't like the numbers, just figure out an alternative way to state it. But the Fed did what was the big issue. I mean, the word stimulus and hopeful stimulus is all over the place. As a matter of fact, when the numbers came out today on the unemployment rate, they were terrible and the markets rejoiced. Mm. Because, you know, the hope was that more stimulus would be coming.
Exactly. That's your basic theory of this show.
Yep.
As advocated by you, is that bad news is good news because it means they're going to keep pumping money into the economy.
Right.
And now I'm totally subscribed to that.
Yep. Earnings are mixed. We saw a tale of two worlds last week where IBM came out with numbers, missed revenues by about $1 billion, and then you had them drop about 7-8% or so and continue to tail down. And they weren't doing well recently anyway. And then you have Google coming out that beat their EPS number by about 10 cents. Their cost per clicks went down, but they had a lot more clicks and their stock went berserk. I mean, it was over $1,000.
Yeah, I was waiting for that to happen.
Netflix comes out today, yesterday as a matter of fact, and their numbers were a bit better and they had better subscribership and the stock is up about 11.5% overnight.
Skyrocketed.
Yep. Then the market opens today and it's still hanging out there and it starts just ever so slightly drifting and drifting. And it looked like it was going to roll, so we shorted it actually, which I seem to do a lot with Netflix. I just can't get away from doing that because you know one day it's going to crack. And now they have more subscribers than HBO, by the way, which I'm not sure what
that
means.
It's a whole different business. I mean, so what?
Well, they have more subscribers than DH Unplugged.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
They can put that out there too.
Yeah, they'd be right.
So. The stock starts coming down. It starts moving down. Next thing you know, it's, you know, even. And it's down 1%. Anyway, it finished down about 8.5%. That's until – now, that's about an 18% move.
It's a lot.
Then Carl Icahn comes out after the close and says he dumped most of his shares. That didn't help. It was down another $7 on that. So we saw a big turnaround. What are we talking about? 20 – what is that? That's 10% and another close to about 22% turnaround on Netflix, which is – it just goes to the point right now where our market is. It's all about buy now and ask questions later. You know, just buy. And then we'll see what happens. So we've seen a good amount of companies come out with missed revenues. Some companies have done very well with regards to, you know, the earnings and all. But, you know, you have to wonder how long that's going to hold up. Margins are, you know, kind of holding in there somewhat. But revenues have definitely been quite soft. So in other news, I thought this was pretty interesting. You know, you go back to – go back to the whole whatever went on with the budget and the debt ceiling issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you something. The Republicans did themselves in pretty good this time. They look like idiots, right? You can't disagree with that.
I think they did a poor job of marketing their process and what they were trying to accomplish. Yeah.
Right. And the thing that really killed them was when they said, we won't allow a default by the U.S., thereby basically showing their hand before the negotiations were even done. And that's why President Obama and the Democrats just didn't let him get any room because they knew they were just going to give in. So now I want to look at, well, what's the congressional approval rating? And this is unbelievable. The most recent average, you look at the total amount, and there's a chart. I think I put a chart there. Did I put a chart there? Yeah, there it is. The congressional approval rating by Real Clear Politics, which combines things like CNN and, you know, NBC, all these different polls. Disapproval rating is 84.2.
Mm-hmm.
Approval rating is 9.2.
Yeah, sub one digit.
That's. I think that car salesmen are above that.
No, they're pretty close to the bottom. I think cockroaches are above that.
Yeah, I mean, cannibals that eat your family are above this.
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, and when you really look at this and you actually deconstruct what these people are saying about Congress in general, is that it's only Congress, not their guy.
Oh, it's the other guys.
Yeah, it's everybody else but their guy. And so everybody keeps reelecting the incumbent. And so the whole thing is dysfunctional because everybody thinks Congress sucks, but they think their guy, the guy they voted in, is okay, is a great guy. When in fact, all of them are bad. And they just, as a whole, they don't work. And so they should be ousted.
So that means, though, if you think that your guy is good, you would not have a... You don't have an objection then to reelecting them, which then if you spread that out throughout the entire country, that the incumbents may have an opportunity. Although in a CNN poll, 75% say that most Republicans in Congress don't deserve reelection.
Except your guy.
Well, my guy, of course. Yeah.
That's the way it always works. Yeah. All these people should be ousted, except my guy. So this is never going to go anywhere. People can moan and groan about all this and these stats and these numbers and how they feel about Congress, but it's not going to change, and it's because everybody's guy is great.
Right. Well, I wanted to do an equal opportunity bashing here. Now, on this whole healthcare thing with the websites that are just dysfunctional, so this was, I thought, a really interesting commentary. In remarks that President Obama made the other day on the healthcare.gov, the website that is supposed to be the conduit for people buying insurance. I think I told you the story. My friend is 17 – no, he's now 21 days, I think, or 20 days into trying his best just to get a response from someone so he can sign up, okay? President Obama said, you know, it hasn't worked out as smoothly as it was supposed to. This commentator who wrote this article said that's a little like saying a plane that crashed into a mountain, caught fire, and exploded didn't land as smoothly as it was supposed to. And 3 weeks into the most flagrant debacle of his presidency – this is not by me. This is by the commentator. Obama didn't say what went wrong, why, or who was to blame, and he offered no details about what the administration is doing to fix it.
They can't fix it.
Now, here's the most interesting thing. In the frantic weeks before the Obamacare came up and the sites went live, there was no testing of the sites to give it a once through of what the entire experience would be like. They failed at doing all the testing. In other words, they didn't go in and say, okay, let me sign up for something and go through the whole process.
Well, I think they did it in the lab. They didn't do it in any meaningful beta way.
That's just – how could this be?
They didn't have time. They only had 3 years to put this together, and they didn't have the skill set to do it, which means it's not fixable. I mean, it'll take another 3 years to fix it.
It's beyond me how websites these days are so integrated with various APIs and all sorts of tools. And even if you're starting from scratch, how this is such a disaster.
Yeah, they should have worked with one of the big companies. I mean, this is some Canadian company I never heard of.
It they seems worked with a Canadian company.
What?
Is that Canadian company?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Really?
And they also did the Hawaii state product, which is also not working. So I don't think these guys should be sued out of business, it seems. Because right. They obviously promised they could do it, and they couldn't do it. But that's classic software development. You know, you promise this, and it takes three times as long.
Or... in the conspiracy theorist's mind, maybe it was all Republicans posing as Canadian technology guys.
Yeah. Right? Well, that would be good if you could pull that off. The Republicans aren't quite that good at stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe during the Nixon administration, it has some guys who could do that.
Yeah, they're tripping all over themselves. But anyway, big news. I talked about Apple with this new release of Mavericks, but they also talked today about they have the upgrade to that. They also are offering a variety of things free with a new if you get a new iPhone, you get some of their different internal apps. They have a new iPad, which is faster, thinner, lighter, 128 gigabytes. And I think it's calling the iPad Air, I think, or something like that.
No, that's what it's called, the iPad Air.
Air, yeah.
So just Air. Further confuse things.
Right. And I think one of the big issues was because Apple was up pretty nicely prior to this, and then as the talking went on, the stock started dripping lower. But there was some issue with some of the pricing. And I guess there was nothing really impressive about the entire discussion, even though there was a refresh of a couple different lines.
Everyone wanted to see the better display, the Retina display on the thing, and they couldn't do it. I guess I don't think they can make enough of those things, whoever makes them. That seemed to be the biggest complaint I heard.
Is that Corning?
I don't know if Corning does make it or not. I don't know who makes it. I mean, it's maybe using Corning glass, but doesn't mean that they're doing the substrate. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think there's a company called what's it called? Now I draw a blank. We've invested in it before. They do the touchscreens. I'll think of it. Anyway, the other thing that's in the news about Apple is they're coming out with this. Well, at least the speculation: the 65-inch television in 2014.
I'm one of the few guys out there that have said they're going to do a television since 2012, maybe even the year before. I don't think I was that far ahead of it. But every time I did one of the shows, you know, Twit or one of the other tech shows, they always say, "You're crazy. Why would they do that?" And my argument was always simple. It had nothing to do with the set. It had to do with the stores. The
right.
stores have got – they got to have stuff in the stores that people want to go look at. So
right.
I figured that the great idea would be to some 4K or even an 8K TV, some outrageously expensive killer television set, and it would drive people into the stores to look at it. And then they might
right.
buy something else or might buy one of them. Who knows?
I mean, that's a large – 65 inches is enormous.
Yeah, but nowadays you go to Costco, they got 70-inchers. The 70-incher I think you can get for $3,000, believe
wow.
it or not. It's
wow.
not it's not a great one. But then they have the 80-inch Sharp. I think it's Sharp who makes the 80-inch one. And they got a lot of 65. 65s and 60s are all over the place.
I mean, so, I love my 48-inch, the Samsung I have, the LED.
48-inch.
Well, maybe it's a little bit. Maybe it's 55. No, it's not 55. I think it's 48.
Oh, that's terrible. You're
small.
Stuck with it.
I know.
I use a projector because you can get a 100-inch display and it's fine.
Mm. Well, it's better than the old days of the black and white with the antennas that you had to put
slap the side of it.
Yeah, slap the side of it. You got like four channels and then you had that little thing to adjust it. You know, that little push button that you had to you pushed it in and turned it. Remember that?
It looks as if Samsung makes these displays.
Huh. Really?
Yeah, there's an article from April of last year, why Samsung makes Retina displays but not for its own tablet.
Hmm. Interesting.
And everything I see is just Samsung.
A couple other tech items. David Pogue, you know him, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's a big guy writing for the New York Times, and he's the gadget guy, and he's kind of very dramatic and fun. And, you know, he's like an actor. Yeah, Walt Marsberg is more of the serious, you know, very boring. This guy is just, you know, he's leaving the New York Times.
Yeah.
He's going to Yahoo. I got to tell you something. Yahoo is really ponying up some money for this stuff.
Yeah, we don't know what he's getting paid. In the past, Yahoo's been dirt cheap. They've been cheap. So I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're giving a bunch of stock because the stock's going up. It might be appealing to him since he's from back east. He doesn't really, you know, see these kinds of deals much. To know that it's probably not a good deal, but it could be. It could be.
I mean, he's a major player at the New York Times. 13 years of the New York Times.
Yeah, he's never really been an employee. He was kind of a contractor with the Times, so he could get away with a lot of stuff, even though he's always getting into trouble. Because he ran off with this woman who is a PR woman, and then he left his wife for 15 years for her. The new woman being the love of his life, as he keeps saying over and over again. And she actually works out of the San Francisco office of Outkast. And I think he was looking to move to the West Coast because I don't know that he's still living in Connecticut. But I think he's out here. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't see that. The New York Times is a gig that he leveraged to the hilt.
Right.
He's done book after book, you know, the dummies books. He did a bunch of dummies books. He did the unofficial documentation books or whatever they're called. He did like 100 computer books, and all leveraging his relationship with the Times. I don't think leveraging your relationship with Yahoo is going to amount to a hill of beans. And also, you have a built-in market at the New York Times. I've thought about this when he quit. I thought it was weird. You have a built-in market. Of course, they may have been tired of some of his shenanigans, but he's got a market. The New York Times is there. People get it, whether they like it or not. It's like an old print. You get the New York Times. Oh, there's Pogue's article. You read it.
Right.
With Yahoo, you have to go find the article. I mean, it's not going to be thrown in your face, and it's not in a newspaper. And most people, when it comes to clicking through on a website, if it's a news website, they might do two or three click-throughs, which means they read two or three articles, as opposed to when you sit down with the New York Times, you might read 20 or 30. And it's just not a winner by any means compared to what he had at the New York Times. As far as I'm concerned, I think it was unless they paid him $1 million or more, hoping for the best, I don't think he made out on this personally. I could be wrong.
All right. We'll see what happens with that. And then I think the last of the technology stories is BlackBerry is finally giving in.
Yeah.
They're the BBM messaging, which was such a big thing for them.
Yeah, in the old days.
Yeah, well.
When I was a kid.
Yeah, and now what they're doing is that they are now releasing apps to the Google Store and the Apple Store so that people that are using either a Google device or an Apple device can actually BBM back and forth to BlackBerry users.
Yeah, this was something they should have done a while back, I think.
This is way too late, and I don't know where the benefit is to begin with.
Well, now there's no benefit. I mean, the days are over. I mean, everyone has switched over to all kinds of subsystems. I mean, just using the regular SMS and on the phones now is pretty common. And then people can also use all kinds of other little nifty bypass things, such as Google Voice and things like that. It's baffling. It's almost like saying, you know, we're coming out. It's a big announcement. We're going to allow people to access AOL mail on Google.com.
Right.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, what's funny is I think I asked three different people, or I told three different people about this. I said, do you know anybody that has BlackBerries? Because now you'll be able to have a direct messaging with them, which you could do messaging anyway, but a little more of a direct. None of them knew anybody that had BlackBerries anymore. That's the funniest thing.
There are people with BlackBerry still, but you're right. Most people who have a BlackBerry don't even know about BBM. They just have the BlackBerry. As far as they're concerned, just another phone with a keyboard.
Right. Exactly. But they are. We're seeing more and more commentary about them. Looking for alternatives and looking to be bought. JCPenney had an interesting story today. Martha Stewart and JCPenney, they're changing their relationship. They're going to, I think, limit it compared to what it is now. And with all the problems that JCPenney has, I don't know how good of a deal that is. And
if I was them, I wouldn't even talk. I would just let Martha do her own thing. It's not going to hurt you.
Right. And the big thing also is that there's been a lot of discussion about their credit line, their revolving credit line that they need to have in order to, pay for merchandise, and then they're going to hold it for a while, and then they're going to sell it so they can pay back the revolving credit line. This is a standard thing that happens in the retail business. But the question is, if you're a bank, are you going to continue to offer at any rate a revolver to JCPenney with all that's going on right now? So if they get that pulled, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, I think they're in big trouble now.
Oh, clearly.
I mean, pulled or not, I think they have, I don't know what, it's just weird because they were such high hopes that these guys could pull out of the doldrums, and they just never got it together.
Well, I mean, not to beat a dead horse here, but I talked to my wife about this a little bit. I said, did you ever shop in JC? Oh, I love JCPenney with all the bargains and the deals and the stuff. You go there and you get coupons and you did all this and there was always specials. And I said, what happened? She goes, they changed that whole thing and I will never go there again because I don't even know what's going on there.
Yeah, so, you know, the audience for stuff like that is fickle. And it doesn't take much. My wife's the same way. One little thing. I mean, this is an old thesis of marketing 101, which is it's harder to get a customer back that you've lost than it is to get a new customer.
Right.
Because once the customer gives up on you, it's very difficult to cajole them to rethink it. And I think JCPenney's with that, you know, I had to say, once I found out that Ron, it was Ron Johnson, right?
Yep.
Once I found out that he wasn't even living anywhere near the headquarters of the company, he was flying in on a private jet two or three times a week from wherever he was, in Atherton or someplace. Mm-hmm. If I'd known that from the beginning, I would have actually shorted the stock in reality, because that is bad when people do that, because it's like, why is this guy even working there if this is how serious he's taking this? Where he can't even be, you know, what does it cost to move? Where, I think they're in Fort Worth or someplace. Where is their headquarters? Whatever it is. You can, you know, and you get this kind of money, this kind of, you can buy a place there. You can buy just a mansion, and you can, you know, it's not a big deal to move the family out for a while and keep the other place on hold while you fix something. But there was no interest in that. I think it was just extremely, and I don't know why the board put up with it. You know, are you serious? Are you going to work here or not?
You know, they do strange things, and then it ends up being ugly. But you know, nobody's watching, nobody's saying anything, and it's up to the shareholders to do something about it. And oftentimes, the boards don't do anything about it either.
No, the boards are useless.
Useless, totally useless.
A lot of these companies are just horrible. They're just a bunch of lackeys. They get paid. Usually, get paid. A lot of these are paid boards. They're not free, at least in these large corporations. And they usually require the company to insure them so they don't get sued for incompetence. And they make a lot of money, and they don't do anything. And if they try to do something, they get kicked off the board.
Right, right. So why bother? Just come to the meetings, make your 100 grand a year, and be done.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, hedge fund manager John Paulson, you know, I bring him up every once in a while when I see something that goes on. And he, you know, he runs a variety of different funds. I think he made something close to $15 billion for himself and investors during the drop in the housing market, because he bet against it and he did very well.
Right, he's the one who made out.
Yep, he had to pay for that for many years. He had to pay off the, you know, pay for the right to have the CDS exposure on that, but it did pay off very nicely. Okay, now fast forward, he's got this money, and he's got his own money in his funds, and he's big into this whole idea that, you know what, the Fed is going to continue printing, the world is going to continue printing the stimulus, and we're going to see inflation. And that has not happened. And one of the big things is he has a pretty substantial amount of his money and clients' money, or did at least, in his gold fund. The gold fund is a fund that is buys gold bullion. It's basically backed by gold, and he buys the gold producers. Well, the fund dropped 16% in September, which now brings it to down 62% year to date. Is that amazing?
Well, he you know, this is a problem. When if you did something like that credit default swap gamble, and you hit it and you hit the home run, you got $15 billion out of the blue for just doing a smart maneuver. You would this would affect your brain. You would be unable to think clearly for the rest of your life.
Because you did so well on it. You think that, in other words, you have the golden touch. Well, not golden. We'll say you have the touch. You know what's going on. You're smarter than everybody.
Yeah.
So therefore, whatever you do, you're going to continue on with, rather, no matter how it turns out.
Right.
Yeah.
You see it. It's a very common phenomenon.
He did say that he is sticking to his thesis because he does believe it. So I guess that does go along with your story pretty well.
Yeah.
That.
How could I possibly be wrong?
I don't know. It's pretty awful. I mean, gold finally did come back. Gold had a good day again today because of the stimulus idea that's going on. And now they're talking about that there won't be any taper through the entire 2014, which is preposterous in my opinion. It's just preposterous.
Well, but it's like you shouldn't. I mean, that should be a kind of a quarter-to-quarter decision. It shouldn't be something you just say, forget it, we're not doing anything until, you know, 2015, we'll think about it.
Listen, if they stop buying bonds right now, it's cold turkey right this second. No more bonds. No more $85 billion per month.
Yeah.
We still have zero interest rates.
The economy would collapse overnight.
But what's
That's
funny
my
is,
theory, of course.
But what's funny is we used to be able to see a recovery with just an interest rate reduction. And this is more than just a reduction. I mean, 2% would be low. They were at 0 to 0.25%. That's not able to spur on the economy?
No, because we're in a down cycle. This is, again, me and my cycle theory. We're in such a down cycle that nothing – all you can do is hold your own and hold on for dear life. And if it wasn't for this free money flowing into the system, we'd be out of luck. We'd be in a worldwide depression. There's no doubt about it. Still going to happen in 2017 the way I see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I find it just – interesting.
I know nobody likes this, but I think Bernanke is of the same, and I think because he studied the stock crashes to such an extent, pretty much, I think that's where he got the same thesis that I did, which is based on the best model for it is from 1849 to about 1870, and that's where you have this free money that kept flowing into the system in the form of gold and silver. To the tune of $15 trillion in today's money that propped up the economy during a down cycle that should have been a depression. And it all came home to roost in 1857, which is the equivalent of today's 2017. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. This is all smoke and mirrors, but it happens so often. This feeding this free money into the system and showing that it's – oh, you do – you know, all these guys, these maniacs. Oh, it's going to cause hyperinflation. It's going to be like Germany in the late 20s or the early 30s. It's going to be – we have buckets full of money and it won't be worth anything. This hasn't even not come close to anything like that, and we're just still printing money.
Right. No, I mean, you haven't seen the Zimbabwe thing that everybody's been talking about.
Yeah, that's the other one. They talk about Zimbabwe. Yeah. No, there's nothing like that. I have a lot of Zimbabwe money.
Well, you could have a lot of Zimbabwe money.
I got trillions and trillions of dollars. I think I have a $100 trillion note.
Wow.
Something like that. Every once in a while, there's a number of people that every time a new one comes out, they send it to me. The early ones, by the way, the early Zimbabwe money, which when you could buy the $1 million bills and those are worthless now, they actually had an expiration date on the bill.
Really?
Yeah, I should. Yeah, this bill is only good till September, you know, of some year.
And well, they're going to have to put a couple of zeros on it. That's why, because the inflation rate was so ridiculous. Now, have you been watching – now, just to kind of now dovetail into the whole idea of inflation or lack of inflation, and then looking also at the commodity cycle that we're seeing right now. Now, crude oil, WTI crude – closed below 100 today. It was at 98 and change. I think the low was right at $98. I mean, it was 108 recently.
Yeah. No, it looks.
We thought that was ridiculous.
I'm looking at 97.62 at the moment.
Really? Is yours alive? Interesting. I have 98.11, which is a couple of minutes old. Also, we have. Heating oil came down. Gasoline prices, you know, look at the gasoline, the NYMEX gasoline is down 7% for the year. Gold is down 25% for the year. Spot silver down 25% for the year. Platinum down 6%. Palladium's up a bit, but aluminum, copper, both down.
Why is palladium up? What's palladium used for that it would go up?
Palladium is a industrial material.
Yeah, well, so is platinum, but...
Well, but platinum's a whole different genre. I mean, I think palladium's a lot stronger. It's more of a – isn't it an alloy? It's not pure, is it?
I'll look into it. We won't talk about it today. We'll find out what's going on.
But and then you look at the agriculture.
No, palladium is an element. It's not an alloy.
It is. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we got to find out what that does exactly. But you have also corn, wheat, soybeans, coffee. Coffee's down 22% this year. Corn's down 37%. I mean, you know, this is obviously not a situation where you're seeing inflation at all, but, you know, you're seeing more of a manipulation, like, for example, what happened with oil. That whole move that we saw and the whole BS with the Middle East, and it was an excuse. And we saw that inventories were as high as they've ever been, but it was just kept on going up. I mean, once you broke 100, it just kept on going and going, and who wants to start holding on to that? You know, it's moving in that direction. But, you know, you look at gold, 20% move this year, and silver. Silver's at 22 and change right now, 22.70, and that's only because it popped up the last few days. Hmm. So really, there's no, you know, going back to that, there's no inflation. There's no inflation if you look at it from the aspect of the U.S. dollar. Now, if we switch over, I can kind of, let me just go to the yen for a second, for example. Japanese yen. Okay, now, here's something interesting. Now, where the crude oil is at $98, we said, it's up 6% for the year in terms of dollars, okay? It's up 20% in terms of yen.
Hmm.
And you're seeing this the same thing. I mean, natural gas up 20% in terms of yen, only 6% here, because that's because the yen has dropped so significantly. And one of the problems that is having, one of the offshoots of this, is that it is really hurting the small business. The exporters in Japan with the Abenomics are enjoying a fantastic run because the yen has come down, orders are up, exports are up. But yet what happens internally when you're not involved in the whole export area is you get squeezed because the yen isn't worth as much. You need to buy product to make your – whatever you're making. And because people are – you know, their yen is lower as well. So now all of a sudden you don't have any pricing power as a merchant, let's say. And there's a big problem, a very vast difference between the companies that are – involved, you know, the multinationals and exporters in Japan, and we'll say the domestic companies that really rely on domestic, domestic demand. Very big situation where a lot of companies are wondering if they can survive at this point. And they don't seem to be – they're not going to stop whatever they're doing over there.
No.
And the yen, by the way, the yen has come up in price. We saw the yen, what was it, 109 or something? Was it 109?
I don't think it got that big.
Let's see. I'm going to look at this. I think this is it. Let's see. I think it's GP, actually. It was at 104. We'll call it round number.
Yeah, now it's 97.
It's just been kind
of. The euro has gone way up, which is disappointing.
It's fascinating. I don't know if it's so much the euro gone up or the fact that if you have an alternative currency to buy, you don't want to buy the yen necessarily because you know this guy is a lunatic and they're going to try everything he can to keep the price down. And you don't want to buy the dollar because you know that Bernanke's all over it with trying to bring down the price too. So where do you go? Europe's in austerity. Europe is not doing any kind of monetary policy that – is negative to their currency, and they kind of talk about inflation here and there. So therefore, if you think about it, the only alternative from the big bloc is the euro. It may not be worth it, it may not be properly valued, but from a where else am I going to put my money if I'm a currency trader, I think the euro is the place you're going to go.
Well, apparently that's exactly what's going on. That is distressing. Yeah. So we've got to look at our stocks because we're going to be out of here at 8.
Yeah, one thing I want to mention. JP Morgan, $13 billion in fines.
Yeah.
But I decided
it's like a water off the duck's back.
The water off the duck's back is even better than that. You know what it is? Real quick. They pay the $13 billion in fines and then they go borrow money at 0%.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? It's just in one hand, out the other, you know, and makes it look good. So let's take a look at the stocks. I mentioned earlier that, of course, closest to the pin is going to be soda. Go over to dhunplugged.com and put in your guesses. And let's take a look at some of the stocks here. Let me make this a little bit bigger here. Okay, I got it. What's new? Let's see. Corn's still hanging in there. Apollo Group that we have there is up 15%. They came out with earnings. There's an area of the chart that has like no upside resistance where it just hit. Came out with earnings, and I think after hours it was up about 14 or 15%. So that's going to add on to that one.
So you think it's going to take off?
Yeah, I mean, it may turn around for some reason, but they beat, and there's a gigantic short interest on that. So that's good. Freeport's doing great. I mean, again, we talked about how, you know, the potential for a turn in buying those stocks that were the most hated for a while. So you got Freeport moving up because, of course, the copper, not so much their gold, but their copper production. And on top of that, it was at, what, 3.5% today because China's GDP came in at 7.8, which was not great, but the dollar came down in value as well. And so, you know, the Freeport copper is doing pretty well there. Potash, which is hanging in there, and they got all sorts of, there's still a lot of controversy with the whole Russian contingent and the Belarus block that are, you know, possibly causing problems, but it's hanging in there. Not doing so well on any of the shorts, although, like I said, you're taking it to the mat on World Wrestling.
Yeah, this is the same joke you use every week.
Well, you're supposed to respond, but you have a chokehold on it.
Yeah, I've got a chokehold on it. Yeah, that's right.
If anybody can come up with something better, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we have a few lines, you know. But I'd have to think about it. I could probably put together 1,000 puns if I wanted to.
What was that guy? What was that guy? Lou? What was the wrestler from years ago? Lou? That's San Martino?
No. Yeah, no, I know who you're thinking. Lou? I can't remember his name either. But yeah, Lou was his first name.
And he was always
gruff
had the belt.
Guy, a big kind of a bigger than life character.
How about Andre the Giant?
Yeah, he's dead.
Is he really?
Oh yeah, those giants, true giants. He's a giant. Was a giant. Don't live that long.
Mm. He was a big guy. Let's see what else. By the way, this is only a game. This is not an offer to buy or sell any security. And of course, these are not recommendations. John C. Dvorak, myself, or clients of Horowitz Company may own the securities that are mentioned here. And if so, it will be duly noted. What was the other one I mentioned? There's really nothing that's gone on. I mean, we see the downstroke that we saw in the markets. We saw it kind of come up a little bit. You know, HomeAway still in the positive with the short. Pep Boys and Molson, really nothing happening there. Cliffs is up 6%. U.S. Steel is kind of just hanging in there right now. I mean, you know, the big thing right now would be an earnings play. You know, you find something that potentially has the opportunity for an earnings, and you have a few companies in the high-end retail coming out. And
there's also insider trading, which I've got one for this week.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And I like the chart. The chart is one of those corkscrew charts where the thing goes down and then it looks like a corkscrew. And then it kind of like, you know, the way the some of those lines would come together and it stops trading. You know, the range is smaller and smaller.
Yep. Oh, that's good. It's called compression. We like the compression.
Yeah, and then boom, should take off. And then if you have the chairman of the board buying the stock like crazy for – let's see how long he's been doing this. Where are we? He's been buying since January, just consistently, $250,000 – a little bit, quarter of a million, third of a million, million.
What's the symbol on this?
This is EVEP.
EV Energy Partners.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden, after buying and buying and buying, kind of nickel and diming it, he dropped $4.9 million in a buy on the 18th of October. And
I see that that spike there. That was, you used to see the volume chart on this comparatively, but this stock was a $65 stock back in September,
right?
And now it's 37 and just kind of hanging out, but it is seeing a little bit of a lift. And I do agree that it is off its consolidation. It really does need to lift past about 40, but you know, it's possible.
Well, if this guy keeps dropping more and more dough into it, he might himself get it up that high. I mean, he's obviously sucking up the stock.
Is this John Walker?
Yeah, Walker.
Johnny Walker. He bought on the 18th. He bought 135,000 shares. Hauser bought 15,000 shares on the 18th. Also, they actually did a 5 million unit offering on 10/18. So he bought some of that. That's interesting. They sold it and he bought it back, and they used it to repay borrowing.
Yeah, it's probably some bookkeeping scam going on there. We wouldn't understand.
Hmm.
But anyway, it looks like I like the chart. I like the guy buying consistently, and then I like the big splurge at the end where he sees that if the guy is following it that closely, that would be the bottom, seems to me. If he's an insider,
yeah,
and he's buying away. Now let's see what happens. There may be some secret thing happening that we don't know about.
There always is.
There always is. There's and it's just kind of fishy, seems right. to me, the whole thing. And so I'm in on this one.
Okay. Well, any other ones?
Let me know. That's all I got.
Notes here. This is EVEP. Let me just put this in here. EV in our little Google EVEP. Google spreadsheet here. I love these Google spreadsheets. They work so nicely.
Yeah, works like a champ, yeah. actually.
Yeah. I want to mention a stock. I'm not sure if you heard of this one, but I think that – let's see here, 10:30. Yep, perfect. Okay, so there's a stock I was thinking about that, you know, has really risen recently, and I'm just starting to wonder if the stock has the ability to really – do some wonders for itself here with the fact that there is a high bar for them to move past. So they have
Symbol?
Earnings coming out. What's that?
Symbol?
FB.
FB. Facebook. I knew that. I thought I was thinking First Bank. Yeah, I knew that. You're going to go long with them?
No, we're going short.
A lot of people are going short with Facebook.
Well, it's. I mean, if you look at the numbers and the revenue, and you look at you know the things they're going to do about a 72 cents next period. Their PE is about 229 right now. Estimated PE moving forward to 72. But if you look at the chart and you look at what's going on, and there's no short interest out there. Short interest is 40. Let's see, short interest percent of float is 40 million.
Oh, that's a good
2%.
Sign.
There's no short interest out there at all.
I like it.
Yep. And on top of that, I think that that recent run that we just saw, which was just absurd, you know, that move from
25, basically.
Yeah, 25 to 52. And now you're starting to see a dip a little. Now, it may or may not. We'll see. But they really only had one good quarter of earnings so far. And there's been some talk that maybe the advertising sales on the mobile isn't as good. I'm really curious to see how they're taking in the revenue from mobile, because I don't get it. You know, I every once in a while go on some of these mobile devices and see things. I mean, where are the ads? I must be missing something. And how are they making money on these ads? How are they actually turning this?
I think the whole mobile thing's a scam.
I don't really understand it.
I don't think anyone's making money off of these ads. I think Google can kind of get away with it because you'll do a search on an Android phone, and the first couple things in the search might be things that that you're searching for, because they stick those things at the top. But it looks like a search result, and so you pop on that with your finger, and boom, you get it. They make money on the advertising. So I think Google can make money a little bit, not a lot, but probably more than these other guys. In fact, maybe it could be a lot. I mean, I use the Google search on the phone quite a bit.
Yeah, that's all I use, actually. But anyway, so Facebook seems to be a little bit ahead of itself, and I this could be a quarter early, but you know, last quarter was so good, and I think there's so much that has been at this point expected from the stock, and all of a sudden the sentiment has turned like not only 180 degrees, ridiculously positive compared to where it was.
Mm.
So, you know, I think it's worth a shot of taking a little bit of a potential short on, especially because it's free in the game. And their earnings are coming out next week. So we'll know it. Well, I think they're on next Wednesday.
All right. Put it on and we'll see what happens next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. I got a small personal put position on this.
A put?
Yep.
What put did you buy?
The 50s.
The 50s? When?
November 50s.
Oh, so you're just a short-termer.
Yeah, well, we're just looking for this earnings.
It could pop. Yep. Make a lot of
money. Actually, it was up, I think. I think I have it right
it's
here.
Already up.
Hmm. It was up. Let's see what it was up. Well, you have, you know, the VIX is starting to kind of, let's see. I was up, where is it? It was up 21% today.
Ooh. Hmm.
I'll take that.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a good call. Interest, or put, huh?
Only I would find that stupidity funny.
The put was a good call. What?
Yeah, exactly.
How does that even work? All right. Well, we'll I'll get some stuff off the cooker.
Yeah, off the grill. Do your thing. We'll talk soon.
And we'll talk next Tuesday.
Good. Looking forward to it.
See you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.